If you're worried about coronavirus, health experts say maybe start with a video chat with your doctor. But is that realistic? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, Demystifying the Digital Economy. I'm Molly Wood. As coronavirus spreads in the United States, the Centers for Disease Control and the World Health Organization are advising hospitals to increase their use of telemedicine, virtual doctor visits over video chat. The goal is to keep what's known as the worried well out of hospitals, where they might actually get exposed, and potentially to reduce the burden on doctors and nurses. So we wondered, is telemedicine widespread enough and effective enough to make a difference? Dr. Robert Wachter is chair of the Department of Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. I asked him how patients should think about using telemedicine.
I mean, to me, the patient that has symptoms that feel like the flu and would otherwise be thinking about trying to get in to see their doctor, if now I have the ability to see a doctor, get the information I need, maybe as testing becomes more widespread, be guided to how I get a test done. If I can do that while sitting in my living room, that feels like a better way of accessing the medical system than requiring an in-person visit for every patient that might need to get care or be triaged.
In the kind of toolbox, where would you place telemedicine in terms of its importance in either preventing or containing an epidemic like coronavirus?
Not super high on the list, because I think at this point, an in-person or telemedicine visit between a patient and a doctor is not going to be the central hub of our response. The response is going to be much more in the public health realm about identifying people who have symptoms, being able to test them rapidly. Of course, that creates a challenge for telemedicine. If at the end of our telemedicine encounter, you've got to go get tested, you can't do that through telemedicine. You have to go somewhere to get a test.
Right. Tell me about any other advances in tech that you think might be helpful right now, specifically.
In terms of other technological capacities, I think a lot of it will come in the realm, rather than of sort of the internet and the web and communications, a lot of it's going to come in the way we're able to, I hope, quickly ramp up the diagnostic testing for this, quickly ramp up vaccine production and other things like that. You know, the way we produce the flu vaccine every year is still not all that efficient. So you wonder whether at the end of this, we will take all of those processes that are still a little bit sluggish and invest what needs to be invested to modernize them so that when the next thing like this happens, we can plug it into an infrastructure and in a way that we couldn't today. And sometimes, unfortunately, you need a crisis to demonstrate that you need to increase your capacity to be able to deal with the next one.
How often will, say, insurance cover these kinds of visits?
It's improved a lot in the last couple of years. I think insurers have recognized that telemedicine is a perfectly reasonable substitute for an in-person visit. You know, several years ago, we were spending a lot of time and energy battling the insurance companies about whether they'll cover telemedicine. And if they don't, the business case to kind of go through what you need to go through to build the capacity, build the system, buy the technology, train everybody, was a little bit weak. That's changed in the last year or two, and I suspect that this outbreak might be the tipping point to change it even more. Most payers are paying for telemedicine visits, paying for them at levels that are not that dissimilar from in-person visits. And I think it had to reach that point before healthcare organizations invested what they needed to invest in either building their own telemedicine capacity or working with one of the companies. You know, 5 or 10 years from now, the idea that I took off half a day of work, drove 20 minutes, parked and paid $15 for parking to go see a doctor for 14 minutes is going to seem crazy. It's going to be like, really, Dad, you did that? It's going to be the complete norm that the way you interface with at least the outpatient healthcare system is through telemedicine visits and increasingly also through sensors and surveys that you answer and other ways of interacting with the healthcare system. Which, and on the other end, on our end, is going to be some of it's going to be doctors and some of it's going to be technology. So that's all growing. And I think this epidemic is probably going to turbocharge that growth.
Dr. Robert Wachter is at UC San Francisco. He's also the author of the book, The Digital Doctor: Hope, Hype, and Harm at the Dawn of Medicine's Computer Age. And now for some related links. Advocates of telehealth and some lawmakers hope that proposed emergency coronavirus funding will include a provision that would make it easier for people to get Medicare reimbursement for virtual visits. Advocates, including, yes, some companies whose businesses would really benefit, also want Congress to make it easier for telehealth providers to enroll with Medicare. As of this week, South by Southwest is still scheduled to happen in Austin, Texas, but Monday, Twitter said that it's pulling out of the event over virus fears. And there was news Monday that Airbnb might delay its IPO because the virus is impacting the travel industry so hard. Finally, related to coronavirus, we covered the video game Plague Inc. on the show recently. It's a game that has players spread a deadly virus across the world. This week, China banned the game, calling it illegal content. But its maker said it's actually an important educational tool and had seen huge growth in China since the outbreak of the virus. And now here's what else we're watching in tech. Apple will pay $500 million to settle a class action lawsuit that accused it of slowing down older iPhones as the new ones came out. Apple denied any wrongdoing. The settlement will amount to about $25 per affected consumer. The lawyers say that is an awesome outcome for those consumers, who probably spent something like $1,000 on a new iPhone. They themselves will seek something like $93 million in legal fees. The system at work. We reported recently that X, the moonshot division of Alphabet, killed off one of its climate-related moonshots, but on Monday, it announced another one. X has apparently invented underwater fish facial recognition. It announced a project called Tidal, which tracks fish in fishing farms by solving two tough problems. First, underwater cameras that can withstand the cold and the saltwater and the pressure of the environment, and AI for recognizing hundreds and thousands of individual fishies. The goal is to help improve farming operations and make eating fish more sustainable and reduce reliance on land-based proteins. And obviously, identify which fish are the cutest. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM. With Super Tuesday on our minds, we wanted to give you a super deal that you don't want to miss. Get your hands on a brand new Marketplace t-shirt when you donate $30 today. Become a Marketplace investor and cast your vote for independent journalism. Donate at marketplace.org today, and thanks.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.